Let me ask you something, and be honest with yourself for a second. When you planned your last cross-country, how much thought did you actually put into the fuel you'd have left when you got there? Not the fuel to get there, the fuel left over. The reserve, for most of us, the honest answer is, not much. We fill the tanks, we figure it's plenty, and we go. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern here on Radio Hangar. Today we're going to talk about one of the shortest regulations in the whole book, and one of the deadliest to ignore, Federal Aviation Regulation 91.51, the Fuel Requirements Rule. The one that tells you the absolute minimum gas you're legally allowed to leave the ground with. And here's the thing. It's not really about the legality, the legal minimum is the floor. What I want you to walk away with today is a healthier relationship with the stuff in your tanks, because running out of fuel is one of the most preventable ways to bend an airplane, and it still happens, over and over, to pilots who absolutely knew better. Let's walk through this together.
Before we dig in, a quick shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial, they've got you covered. It's a great way to mark the milestones that matter. And honestly, the first cross-country you plan where you really understand your fuel is a milestone worth marking. AviationSoul.com.
Okay, let's get into the regulation itself, because it's short enough that you can actually hold the whole thing in your head, which is more than I can say for a lot of the FARs. 9151 covers fuel requirements for flight in visual flight rules conditions. VFR, and it breaks into two pieces. Depending on whether you're flying in the day or at night, here it is. During the day, you may not begin a flight in an airplane under VFR unless, considering wind and forecast weather conditions, you have enough fuel to fly to your first point of intended landing and, assuming normal cruising speed, to fly after that for at least 30 minutes. At night, that number goes up. Same setup, but instead of 30 minutes, it's 45 minutes. That's it. That's the whole rule for airplanes day. 30 minutes, night, 45 minutes on top of the fuel it takes to actually get where you're going. Now, let's take that apart, because there are a few words in there that pilots skate right past, and every one of them matters. First word, begin. You may not begin a flight. This is a rule about the moment you release the brakes and start your takeoff roll. The FAA is telling you that the planning happens on the ground, before you ever move. This is not a rule you evaluate in the air, it's a pre-flight calculation. It belongs on your navigation log, next to your headings and your times, done at the kitchen table or on the ramp. Not guessed at over the fuel gauge at 3,000 feet. Second phrase. First point of intended landing, not your final destination. Your first point of intended landing, if you've planned a fuel stop halfway, the rule applies to that stop. You need enough to get to the fuel stop plus your reserve. Then you fill up and the clock resets for the next leg. That's actually good news, because it means the reserve is measured against the next place you're planning to put wheels down, not the far end of your whole trip. Third phrase, and this is the one I want you to really chew on, at normal cruising speed. Your 30 or 45 minutes of reserve is calculated at cruise fuel burn, not at idle, not at some gentle lean of peak economy setting you've never actually flown. Normal cruise. So if your airplane burns, say, 10 gallons an hour in cruise, your day VFR reserve is 30 minutes at that rate, 5 gallons. Your night reserve is 45 minutes, 7.5 gallons. That's the legal minimum in your tanks after you touch down. And now, let me say the thing that the regulation does not say, but every instructor worth their certificate will tell you. 30 minutes is not enough. I mean it. 30 minutes is the legal floor, and the legal floor is a terrible place to build your flying. 30 minutes of fuel evaporates the instant anything about your plan goes sideways. A headwind that's 20 knots stronger than forecast. A runway that goes out of service and sends you to the alternate. A pattern that's full and puts three airplanes ahead of you. And a tease that's calling a runway change that adds 10 miles to your approach. Any one of those eats into 30 minutes fast, and they love to show up in pairs. So here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. Fly to a personal fuel minimum and make it bigger than the regulation. For a lot of general aviation flying, 1 hour of fuel on landing is a sane, round, easy number to build your planning around. Some folks go 90 minutes. Pick your number, write it down, and treat it like it's the law, even though it's stricter than the law. Because the airplane does not know the difference between legal fuel and comfortable fuel. It only knows how many gallons are actually sloshing around in the tanks, and gallons are the only thing that keeps the propeller turning. Let me put a real scenario on it, because this stuff lives in scenarios, not in numbers on a page.
Picture a Cessna 172. You've got a 400 nautical mile cross-country planned, and the airplane will burn about 8.5 gallons an hour in cruise. True out around 115 knots. The tanks hold 53 gallons, about 50 usable. On paper, that's almost 6 hours of endurance, sounds like a lot. Now the day gets real. The forecast winds aloft were calling for a 10-knot headwind. You launch, you level off, and your ground speed is telling you the actual headwind is closer to 25. That's a big deal. Your ground speed just dropped, your time en route just went up, and every extra minute in the air is burning that 8.5 gallons an hour. Whether you like it or not, halfway there, the destination aid is now reporting a runway change and a broken layer that's lower than briefed. You're gonna hold a few minutes? Maybe you're gonna divert. Here's the moment the regulation becomes real. If you plan to arrive with exactly 30 minutes of fuel, all that slack you thought you had just got eaten alive, and now you're making a genuinely stressful fuel decision while you're also flying an approach into weather that's worse than you expected. That's task saturation. That's the setup for the accident. But if you plan to arrive with an hour, you've got room. You can hold, you can divert to that airport 12 miles back that has fuel and a longer runway. You can make a calm decision instead of a desperate one. The extra 30 minutes of fuel didn't cost you anything on the ground. It bought you the entire ballgame in the air. That's the whole point. Fuel is time, and time is options. When you run your tanks down toward the legal minimum, you're trading away your options right when you're most likely to need them. Now, let me connect this to your training and your check ride, because the examiner cares about this a lot and the airman certification standards spell it out. Cross-country flight planning is right there in the ACS. The examiner is looking for you to compute fuel required for the flight, to plan a course of action that includes an adequate fuel reserve, and to understand the regulatory requirement. So on your check ride, when you present that navigation log, your fuel column needs to close. You need to show the fuel to your destination, plus your reserve, plus, ideally, a little cushion beyond the minimum. And you need to be able to say out loud what the rule requires. Day 30, night 45, at cruise burn, to the first point of intended landing. The examiner is also looking for something a little deeper than reciting the number. They want to hear that you understand fuel as a risk management item, not a math problem. If they ask you, what would you do if you got airborne and the winds were worse than forecast? The answer they're hoping for is the one where you've already built in margin and where you've got a clear trigger for when you divert to top off. That's aeronautical decision-making, and it's exactly what this regulation is quietly trying to teach. Let me give you a few practical habits you can use on your very next flight, whether you're a student or you've been flying for 30 years. Habit 1. Know your airplane's real fuel burn, not the number in the sales brochure. The number you actually see at your typical power setting, at your typical altitude. Lean it the way you actually lean it. Watch the fuel flow or do the math after a few flights and know your true gallons per hour. Everything downstream depends on that one honest number, habit 2. Dip the tanks, physically. Look, use a calibrated fuel stick or the tabs and confirm with your own eyes how much fuel is on board before you fly. Fuel gauges in light airplanes are only required by regulation to be accurate at one place, and that place is empty. Read that again. The only point your fuel gauge is legally required to be accurate is when the tank is empty, so do not plan your flight around the needle. Plan it around what you saw when you looked in the tank, plus the fuel burn math, and use the gauge as a backup that confirms the trend. Habit 3. Time your fuel, don't just watch it. Note your takeoff time. Know your burn. A clock and a known fuel flow will tell you more truth about your remaining fuel than the gauge ever will. If you took off with 40 usable gallons and you burn 8.5 an hour, then 2 hours in you should have about 23 gallons. And if the gauge disagrees dramatically, that disagreement is information. Believe the lower of the two, habit 4. Set a landing fuel target and honor it without negotiating. Decide before you launch. I will be on the ground somewhere with no less than, let's say, 10 gallons in the tanks. When you hit that number, you land. Not, let me stretch it to the home field. It's only 20 more miles. That little bargain, the one where you talk yourself into stretching it, is written into the reports of a lot of fuel exhaustion accidents. The fuel doesn't care about your schedule. It doesn't care that Avgas is cheaper at your home field. When you hit your number, you put it on the ground and you buy gas. And let me draw a clean line between two words that get muddled, because the accident reports use both. Fuel exhaustion means the tanks are dry. There is no more fuel on the airplane. Fuel starvation is different.
Fuel starvation means there's fuel on board, but it's not getting to the engine. A fuel selector on the wrong tank, a tank you forgot to switch to. 9151 is about exhaustion, about having the quantity, but the habit of managing your tanks, switching on a schedule, knowing which tank is feeding, that's how you prevent starvation. Both of them stop the engine just as dead, and both of them are on you as the pilot in command. One more piece, and then I'll let you go plan a flight. This rule is VFR. 91451 is the visual flight rule's fuel requirement. If you go onto your instrument rating, there's a stricter cousin, 91.167, that adds fuel to fly to your destination, then to your alternate, and then 45 minutes beyond that at normal cruise. More conservative, because instrument flying puts you in exactly the kind of weather where you can't just look out the window and land in a field. But even as a VFR pilot, that instrument standard is a beautiful mental model. Fuel to get there, fuel to get to somewhere else, and fuel to spare after that. If you fly every cross-country with that three-part picture in your head, you will never be the pilot gliding toward a road with a dry tank and a very quiet cockpit. Because here's the truth underneath all of it. Running out of fuel is almost never a mechanical failure. It's a planning failure, or a decision-making failure, and that means it is almost completely within your control. That should make you feel powerful, not nervous weather. You can't control. Traffic you can't control. But the gas in your tanks, and the discipline to land before it runs low, that is 100% yours. So on your next flight, do the whole thing. Dip the tanks, know your real burn, note the time, set a landing number bigger than the regulation. And when the winds come up worse than forecast, and someday they will, you'll be the pilot with options instead of the pilot with a problem. My thanks to the Federal Aviation Administration for the regulations themselves, and to the Airman Certification Standards for laying out exactly what a competent cross-country planner looks like. You can find more of these segments over at RadioHanger.com. Go put honest fuel in the tanks, plan for the day that doesn't go to plan, and I'll see you back here in the pattern.